best I can. I'm a do-right kid in a brand-new place I land. Now I got the don't have to, can't be satisfied. Every night and day, I hang my head and cry. I go to the front door to buy a rocking chair. Lose all the text, we're gonna rock away.
Hi, this is Emma. I am a co-host of Transpositive, and I'm also the current president of the board of directors here at KABU. At KABU, we prove every day that people-powered radio has the ability to bring us together across distances and give us hope when we feel despair. Your friends at KABU want to remind you that generosity has the same power. Join thousands of KABU supporters from all around the world, and let's rally together to build stronger communities. If you can, just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number 44321. And thanks so much for your support of KABU Community Radio.
Bedroom surprise.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Here we go again, it's the game we love.
Play game.
Tune in on the first and third Tuesday of the month at 11 a.m. for Winner's Bias, a new show exploring the culture around tabletop gaming. From game nights to conventions, Nate and James share what makes the hobby so vibrant through banter and interviews with local members of the hobby game scene. And if we can inspire a few listeners to join us around the table, all the better. More people to play with. Winner's Bias. You don't have to win to have fun, but it doesn't hurt. The first and third Tuesday of the month at 11 a.m.
KABU has a mobile app. You can listen to all your favorite shows, subscribe to KABU podcasts, even set KABU as your alarm clock. Just look for KABU on the iTunes and Google Play Store. And don't forget to leave us a 5-star review.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! You're listening to KABU 90.7 FM.
Bisexual, transgender, queer and questioning, intersex, asexual or agender, as well as Two-Spirit community members. Tonight, we are live in Studio One with our ninth panel, Queer Spaces and Places. So I'd like to go ahead and start. Can we get everyone's name, pronouns, and if you're feeling a little spunky, your age?
Hey, I'm Francis. My pronouns are they, them, and I'm 33 for anyone who's wondering.
Hi, my name is Bernadette, but everybody calls me Bernie. Pronouns she, her, and I am about to be 31.
Hi, my name is Danny. Pronouns she, her. I turn 30 next month.
My name is Kate Mira, pronouns she, her, and it seems like I am the elder of the group at 44.
Woo!
Right, and if everybody could go around and tell us briefly your gender and sexual identity.
Sure. Kate Mira here again, queer pansexual, and I also happen to be polyamorous and pagan.
Danny again, and your friendly neighborhood queer.
Bernie, and also queer.
And I identify as queer trans mask.
Amazing. And then let's hear a little bit about your community spaces. Tell us how your space came to be and where it's at now.
So Fuse Theater Ensemble is currently at the Backdoor Theater, which is behind Common Grounds Coffee Shop, 4319 Southeast Hawthorne Avenue. For those of y'all who have been in Portland for a long time or really plugged into the theater scene, it's where Defunct Theater used to be. And that was a really intentional handover from one queer theater that was ready to take a pause at producing to reaching out to another queer theater saying, hey, would you be willing to take over the lease here? Because we want to make sure that queer theater and queer safe spaces remain here in Portland, where our small theater scene is dwindling a lot.
Yeah, so Bernadette and I co-founded and co-host a community showcase pop-up event called Show Out, where we look to highlight local creatives, makers, doers of all mediums here in Portland, Oregon, prioritizing BIPOC and queer artists. We're currently grant funded, but we look to not only create a space, but expand that and invest in our local community, our community. And we do that through inviting other communities to get to know, get behind, to show up and show out for the local creative community. And for the artists, we not only just want them to be showcased and supported and celebrated, but to be invested in, and so that we can invest in their today to ensure that they can also create tomorrow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, she kind of said it all, and it manifests as art shows, pop-up artist showcase. We just hosted a queer panel talk, very similar to you guys, a small talk in my artist studio. And so we kind of take whatever modality kind of fits the conversation that we're trying to have.
And I run a community sewing studio called Sincere Studio. We're located in Northeast Portland, 2636 Northeast Sandy Boulevard. And our space really aims to create accessible sewing education for everyone. And we try to do that with a focus of sewing as a tool of empowerment, social change, those kinds of things, because that we found was like something that was really missing in the sewing community in Portland. But just sewing as a whole, it can be really inaccessible for a lot of people. So something that we do at the studio is basically provide everything you need so that you can just walk in and start sewing.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. And kind of a follow-up question on that for everybody. What was the motivating point or trigger point when you were like, I need to do this, I need to start, I need to get involved? And well, we can go start with you, Frances.
So I started Sincere Studio after I got fired from a social work job, probably for trying to unionize. I felt like it's kind of now or never. I've always wanted to do something like this, and it just kind of felt like the right time. Something that really bolstered that was, again, just looking around me and seeing like where are spaces that I would want to go and sew in community and make things in community with other people. And I wasn't necessarily finding very many that felt like they were not only like inclusive of me, but also built for me. And that's something that I try to do with Sincere Studio, because sometimes I find that inclusive, it's almost like we're including you in the default, not we made this for you. Mm-hmm. So that was my mindset when starting the space.
Very cool. Very similar. We were, especially after COVID, trying to find spaces to gather and be creative. And we really turned towards our friends and our community to try to ask them, what are we all needing? What are we all wanting? What are we all craving? And so from those conversations, we were able to literally take a survey of the people around us and apply for the grants that Danny was talking about and begin to form what Show Out is. We didn't really have a clear idea of what exactly it was going to be, but we were forming it and crafting it and nurturing it as we go along.
Yeah, and our idea continues to expand and evolve as the community asks change. I think also in listening to everybody, we happen to all have creative spaces, and I think that's so beautiful that it's queer and it's creative. And I think that in creative, you have to be creative in the solutions that you create, and trying to make a space where it is providing a strong social fabric of gathering. And Bernadette mentioned our last Out Loud panel that we did with three amazing queer talents from Portland. And having these community conversations is another creative way in which we heard the ask of wanting to be in conversation and wanting to gather and wanting to hear from other people that were like them.
Fuse has a slightly different origin story. 16 years ago now, a prior theater company called Integrity Productions decided that they were going to divide. They had had two artistic directors at that time, and each one of them was wanting to create theater in vastly different ways. So rather than continuously having bits of friction or having each side having to do a lot of compromise in the theater they created, they decided to divide the company. And Rusty Tennant, Fuse Theater Ensemble's current artistic director, and I were two of the people that the founding artistic director, Carrie Sorchi, reached out to, well, then Sorchi, now Erdenberger, reached out to saying, hey, I'm really interested in forming a viewpoints-based theater ensemble. And viewpoints, for those of y'all who don't know, it's a physical theater technique. It is a heck of a lot of fun. I highly recommend it. And Rusty and I were completely on board, but Rusty was getting ready to move to New Orleans to teach. And so I was not. I did stick around and stay as one of the founding members of the company. And then a few years later, Carrie, for completely understandable reasons, needed to step down. And I was voted into being the artistic director. And it was not a position that I wanted to do alone. And it just so happened that that's when Rusty was moving back to Portland. And I said, hey, Rusty, do you want to be co-artistic director of a theater company with me? And they said, sure. And it is amazing how just putting queer people in leadership then suddenly shifts the trajectory of the theater company, because Fuse was not founded initially as a queer safe space. But because we have so many queers and we put so many queers in places of leadership, we became that. And now intentionally foster that, as well as really making sure that our trans artists have great spaces to tell their complex stories also.
Trickle down economics. And just as a reminder, if you're just tuning in, you are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7, and you are tuning in to the 9th live panel in commemoration of LGBTQIA2S+ heritage. If you'd like to support panels like this and so much more, you can go to kboo.fm/give and become a member today. And speaking of members, Kate, you have a question for our panelists.
Yes, I do. I think it's amazing that, like Danny said, all of you are in the queer art world in Portland. And so I would love to hear what you guys think about the general art community in Portland. Is it inclusive enough? Where do you think that it could grow, and how have you seen it change?
I can start. I think there's never enough community spaces in general. The more the merrier. I think when it comes to queer spaces, we also have to consider the intersectionality and the different identities that people hold on top of being queer. So we have a lot of queers in Portland, which I'm grateful for. In terms of queer spaces, there are a lot of white queer spaces and a lot of more queer masculine spaces. I would love to see that change, and I would love to see a more diverse leadership, kind of how you're mentioning. It's amazing what happens when you put queer people in a place of power to lead that. It would also be amazing to put the resources in other types of queer hands in order, like BIPOC queers and femme, women-loving women queers, and all those different identities too, to ensure that there's equal representation, because queer isn't a monolith. It doesn't look like one thing.
Mm-hmm. Danny, I feel like you said it perfectly. I don't know that there's much more to say. I will also add that I'm grateful in Portland that at least the majority of theater spaces I have been in, I have felt welcomed with my myriad of identities. And I also recognize that as a white person, that in given Portland's history, that there's a lot more privilege there. And there's always more that can be done. I would also love to see many more queer performances out there, and we have some phenomenal ones, like Zelos Marchant was just a part of a big thing this past weekend, and the work that Stephen Thorney, Way to Heaven, does. Like, there's a lot of good work out there.
To touch a little bit on what you said, Danny, definitely we here at KVU wanted to put on this panel series because we also don't believe that queer is one certain thing. And, you know, we've seen that over the course of many panels, this being one of them. And I also was kind of curious, speaking of the spaces in Portland, what has been your individual experiences living as a queer person in the Pacific Northwest?
It's been great. Everyone says that, you know, Portland doesn't have a gay neighborhood because the entire city is the gay neighborhood. And that's really been my experience. Although I don't know that I'm the best person to answer this because I've never lived in anywhere that has been hostile towards queer people. So I'm a little bit, I just don't have that experience. So what I'm comparing it to is another pretty big liberal city. So,
yeah, I can jump in. Bernie here. it's been really interesting because I'm from the East Coast, and obviously it's radio, so y'all can't see me, but I'm black. and so moving to Portland as a queer person, as a black queer person, has been a beautiful and also complex experience because it's the queerest city I've lived in. And like Francis was saying, I come from Baltimore and Detroit, which are big metro areas which have queer populations, not as dense, I guess, as Portland, but, you know, it's not openly hostile. And so it's a place where I've been able to flourish in my queerness, but also then have to deal with, on the other side, a different kind of alienation because of my race. And so it's been an experience where I've had the pleasure and the burden of experiencing every human emotion, from feeling intense belonging to feeling intense alienation or invisibility. So it's been a wild ride, but one I'm very thankful for.
Yeah, I'm also from the East Coast, and I definitely came out over here, but also into my adulthood. But it feels easier and a little bit safer to be seen in some capacities in my queerness while in Portland, that I don't necessarily feel, I came from South Carolina, that I would have as much privilege in that. But, you know, queers exist everywhere. It's just the spaces in which hold them. And I feel better able in a lot of ways, even to show my body in Portland, and that's outside of my queerness, that I wouldn't necessarily always feel able to do in other places. But
I also came from the East Coast originally.
What's up, East Coast gang?
I know, right? I was up in New Jersey, though. And I wouldn't say that this is necessarily... This is something that I have felt a lot of the places that I've lived, because I don't present terribly queer. I present like the witchy hippie that I also am. And I have, thankfully, similar to what Frances was saying, I have always been in spaces that have been... that have been comfortable with queerness in my adult life. And so more what I've felt in queer spaces is that I don't come off as queer enough. And so, but at the same time, like, there's also that question of projection, like, do I feel like I am not queer enough? And so I'm putting that into the space, or is that actually coming from the space? And there's like, what are you doing here? Are you really queer? And so it's not really clear for me which there is there, because it's a little back and forth mirroring. But at the same time, I have rarely felt anyone be openly hostile to me for any of my identities.
Thank you all for sharing. And kind of bouncing off of that, you all have queer community spaces, but outside of these spaces in your personal lives, does your social circle mostly consist of other members of the queer community, or does it kind of vary?
So for me, it varies. Something that I noticed about Portland is that it's such a progressive city compared to other places in this country, at least, that you can kind of like form relationships with people over other aspects of shared identity. So I kind of think of like high school, when all the gay kids are in the gay straight alliance, you got to like group together for safety. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do that here. So you can kind of think like, okay, I really like sewing. I'm going to go hang out with other sewing people. So it allows you a little bit more freedom in connecting with other people.
That's a great point of what the safety provides, your ability to also expand what your community looks like, that I didn't think about before. But you're right. I think that my community is kind of mixed in that. I mean, we... At least with Show Out, we prioritize queer and BIPOC artists. And so inherently, we're always going to be queer, not to mention we are queer. So we show up and it's gay. but in terms of like my internal community, I'm blessed to have a good variety of people of all walks of life.
Yeah, likewise. And yeah, for instance, I think your insight there was very... very astute, because I do think it's a city that allows those connections regardless of sexual orientation in a way that might not be possible in a city that's less progressive. But yeah, and I think especially through the arts, kind of like you were saying, through sewing, it's kind of like a door for, that's already your connection point. So it allows you to connect with kind of like a kaleidoscope of folks of all varieties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like I'm going to lean into that, what safety provides, a little bit longer in the evening, just because you're right. It's why having these types of conversations are so important, and providing safe places so that you can connect also with people who are different than you. And that I honestly didn't consider it in that framework before.
Mm-hmm. I agree with everything that was just said, and circling back to the initial question, Kate, the other Kate, here, in one of my pagan circles, people call me my friend Kate. So if it gets confusing, you could also say my friend Kate. Mm-hmm. I have a pretty diverse group of folk, but I will also say that the majority of people I hang out with are either in the pagan community, in the theater community, or in the union that I'm a part of, and all of those are just full of queer people and have been historically, herstorically, ourstorically. So, but I do also travel a good deal, and I love to be a local vore everywhere I travel and everywhere I tour to. And so I feel like that's actually where I get more of my, more of the different perspectives in my life.
Thank you. And then you've all talked a little bit about like your spaces that you've helped build and be a part of and what they do for you. But outside of those spaces, where do you find the strongest sense of community? Is there like a particular bar, restaurant, park, or other groups that you're a part of that you really feel part of the PNW?
I love my union.
We here at KBOO support unions as well.
I mean, the community I serve is also the community I'm part of. And so in that, those are like the places I like to hang. Like all of my friends are extremely talented and creative, and I'm not even biased. It's just a statement. It's a truth. I'm surrounded by so many inspiring, amazing people. And So I find myself going to a lot of local events and functions, whether that be galleries or music events or even a book club. There are so many options here in Portland, and my friends just happen to be the people participating in creating it.
Yeah, for me, it's not a specific singular place, but kind of like I was mentioning before, I also I also paint murals around town, and that's been a great way to create some community and some really long-lasting bonds. And so that's kind of been my main gateway. But as Danny was saying, you know, it's not necessarily a place, but it's always like the people around you who, whether it be an art show or a book club or wherever. But yeah.
Shameless plug for Bernadette. Keep your eyes out. You've probably seen her artwork out there. Like I said, I'm surrounded by so many talented and amazing people. Some of them are sitting right beside me.
Well, thanks.
You chose your business partner well.
For me, in terms of community, it probably the neighborhood around Sincere Studio, which I also live in, so that's really fun. But there's a ton of queer businesses and spaces in that neighborhood, and it's just super comfy, and I love knowing the people that are like operating the spaces. And I know you said outside of your business, but I'm gonna say Sincere Studio anyway. Yes. We have like a lot of just amazing, cool, queer and trans people that come, and we have like queer specific sewing clubs, things like that. So it's been really cool to see people come in and just feel comfortable to be the real freak that they are. Freak in a good way. Yeah, it's been really cool, and I've made a lot of really amazing connections.
Hearing you talk about your sewing studio, Frances, makes me want to have want to invite your sewers and knitters and crocheters to come to the Backdoor Theater, because since we did our remodel, we now have like sofas and things, so it's super comfy to just like sit and hang out in before or after shows and things like that. And we have groups, the Radical Fairies come in on weekends, and it is also just a really lovely cozy space now in a way that not every theater is, which I love.
Frances with the textile takeover.
Yes.
We'll be there.
And if you are just tuning in, you are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7, and you are tuned in to our ninth panel in commemoration of LGBTQIA2S+ heritage. If you'd like to support panels as like this and many, many more, you can go to kboo.fm/give and become a member today. We love our members here. And I wanted to move on to our next really interesting question. So times are changing. A lot more spaces have come up in recent decades for queer folks. And so I'm kind of curious what your experience is with the internet or digital assets and how that's played a role in building out your community, if any.
I want to jump in on here because one of the things that Fuse did during the pandemic was we started live streaming our performances, and it's something that we have kept up post-pandemic thanks to a technology grant from the Kochner Foundation. And it's been fantastic because there are so many people for so many reasons who, whether it's being immunocompromised or differently abled or wanting to watch a Fuse show from Australia. We were talking about Australia earlier, the Adelaide Fringe Festival there. If you ever have a chance, fantastic festival. People are able to access, and so being able to have that streaming capability has been really wonderful for Fuse to have a greater reach outside of Portland.
Yeah, social media has been huge for Sincere Studio. And I think one of the reasons is that queer people use the internet to vet spaces. There's a lot of like word of mouth conversations going on. And honestly, seeing things online from other queer people has like discouraged me from going places because, you know, someone said, oh, I had a bad experience here. So I think it's a really important tool in creating safety in your life. But yeah, it's also an awesome place to connect if you're not able to do that in person.
Yeah, and I'm a former Tumblr girl, so I'm no stranger to outsourcing friendships via online. But I know with Show Out, when we're not hosting something, we're constantly posting on our stories other local events or resources that are being distributed or grant opportunities or mutual aid asks on our stories, because, you know, we all know somebody that knows somebody, and word of mouth, like you said, is so important. And promoting, there's enough room for everybody in promoting, so that, you know, that this might not be for me, but it might be for you. And I would love to see you there, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with what everybody has said. And then for me personally, the internet has had a very complicated role in my life. I've had some very negative experiences on the internet. And so through, like everybody was saying, through connecting people, through promoting different events, through seeing what's happening in the community, being able to vet things, it's been a nice way of kind of healing a few of those wounds. And as Danny said, bringing people together and seeing what people are up to and connecting people who might not be able to physically be there, but then, you know, are able to see what you're up to in the internet and maybe find a safe space there. So yeah, it's been super, super important.
Yeah, and tool is how you use it. So it's very much also can be a toxic and a hard place to navigate and overwhelming. And, you know, we're kind of overloaded with a lot of information constantly. And so knowing that they both exist, and, you know, you need boundaries on the internet too. Mm-hmm. You need safe spaces on the internet too. And things happen so much faster on the internet. And so because of that, that impact can feel a little bit more urgent or a little bit more haste.
Absolutely. Thank you for all those thoughts about how the internet can be toxic, but it can also be a safe space in a way. I think that most of you probably found out about this panel on social media.
Sure
so
did.
Love that yeah. as a correct. Community building tool. And then pivoting a little bit, we all know there's a lot of unique challenges that queer business owners can face. And I'd love for you guys to share about some challenges maybe you've encountered while building up your community space.
Money.
I'm glad we are on the same page. I was about to say resources,
which is money.
Late-stage capitalism, it's pretty much always money.
Yep. Yeah. It's really hard to reconcile that money part with some of my values, and I'm sure y'all feel the same way. It feels hard to want money. Like outwardly want it, but you have to.
Yeah, it's a tool.
Yeah,
it's a tool like the internet.
Yeah, and there's plenty of resources. It's the distribution and the access to and the gatekeeping of that is a lot of these barriers and how to do it. And I definitely with Show Out, we feel that too. Where, you know, we're community centered, so we want to make it as accessible as possible. And so most everything is free, and we're also using the grants to invest financially into the artists that we promote or showcase, and trying to navigate how to make that sustainable so that we can do it for a long time does incorporate money. And it's like fighting capitalism with capitalism, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, Danny, the what you said about there being a lot of barriers to the money is so real, because we're also a nonprofit at Sincere Studio, and just knowing how to get a grant is like a huge barrier, knowing where to find it. And so that's been a big barrier for us, is just even accessing like the knowledge of where the resources are.
Yeah, and then getting the grant. There's a level of financial literacy that you need to have. Mm-hmm. Like, turns out grant isn't free money. I didn't know this when we first got our grant. We get a nice little tax to file for as a income that we didn't actually experience, that we use to promote for Show Out. And so it comes with a lot of education too that is needed. And Bernadette's even made our deck that we pitched for grants accessible for anybody who might need it, because sometimes the hardest part is getting started or knowing where to go. And Bernadette is great with making these pitch decks, and so we have like a blank space that she created to be able as another resource for folks.
And it'll be really interesting to see how the resource landscape shifts in Portland with how arts funding is being changed, with how RAC is changing and how the city is taking over a lot of funds, which hit Fuse really hard, because we had a 3-year plan to be able to apply for one of the RAC operational support grants and employees doing the whole thing. And this would have been our year to apply for one of the coveted operational support grants. And the city of Portland made very clear that they are not having any new operational support grants. And the board and the ensemble went we are 3 years, and you know, the 3 years of work that we did is still all good work, having employees, like all of that, like none of us are upset for the choices that we have made over the last 3 years, but the outcome that we were hoping for of more operational support is now not there through RAC, at least. And like y'all were saying, we work really hard to make sure that our theater is affordable. And so our ticket policy is gay AF, give as your able friends. And so while we have a...
That's cute. I might need to steal that.
By all means, please do. Please do. More things being gay AF in this world is a beautiful thing. And so, sure, you know, plenty of people give the $20 suggested donation to a show, but there are also plenty of people that give $5 or $2 or no dollars. And so we make up the difference in our budget through individual donations and through foundation support. And the foundation support over the last couple of years for a lot of us has really dwindled. It looks good. It's looking a lot better for next year for foundational support, because some of the foundations that took time off to restructure and do some deep dive into how they allocate their funds and giving more equitably are now coming back with their strategies and new giving practices. And so I'm excited to see what happens in terms of distribution of resources, especially for queer spaces and BIPOC spaces and femme-run spaces, trans-run spaces. Hopefully next year means a much higher resource yield for all of us going out for those grants. But for the last 2 years, it's been hard, at least from my perspective.
Well, and these conversations are so important because you have a set of knowledge when it comes to grants and having employees. Frances, you have a knowledge of nonprofit. We're just two humble individuals hosting this event. We haven't fully decided how to
structure the business.
Beautifully said. And we've even thought about being a social enterprise versus a nonprofit, so that
I was gonna say, I have some thoughts for you.
Yeah, just so that we don't feel like we are dependent on other resources in order to succeed, so that we are also bringing in multiple streams and also reimagining what it looks like to be supported. Like, we as a community have everything that we need, and we all have all separate knowledges that we could, you know, better support each other with. And like, maybe that's bartering. Maybe you have a space and I have a trade. Maybe you have access to this information and I have access to this vehicle. We all have something that provide that can transcend money so that we don't feel as dependent on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and kind of just to jump off of that, also circling back to the question, I think to Danny's point, one of the major, and to everybody's point, one of the major challenges is also adapting when things inevitably go wrong, because something's going to fall through, the grant's mm-hmm. going to fall through, people aren't going to show up, and you know, how to keep yourself, how to find different ways to get that capital, but also how to find different ways to keep yourself motivated through it. And as Danny was saying, getting clever with exchanges or going to your neighbor and asking questions and things like that.
Thank you. And I'd like to remind our listeners, you are tuning in to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. This is our ninth live panel in commemoration of LGBTQIA2S+ heritage. And as a reminder, listeners, you can call in and ask questions to our fantastic panelists. To call in, you call 503-231-8187. Again, if you'd like to participate in this conversation about queer spaces, call 503-231-8187. And I'd like to ask a follow-up question as far as sort of the struggles and challenges you face while building up your spaces. We talked a lot about money, finances, organizational structure. Is there any interpersonal challenges you faced while building up these spaces and working with people in the greater community? Frances, you have something to say, I can tell.
It's really hard to be a leader sometimes, to be the person to make all the decisions. So that's something that has been a learning experience for me, but I've also really enjoyed it.
I was waiting for Bernadette to say me.
Yeah, Danny's the problem. No, I'm just playing. But in all seriousness, to Francis's point, it is hard to be, obviously I have the benefit of having a business partner, but it is still hard when you're either an individual or just two folks to be responsible for everything. And so, yeah, the interpersonal challenges abound, from people not having capacity to people not showing up to, you know, we both still have full-time jobs. And so,
it's our full-time non-paying job.
Yeah. And so how do you show up for the thing that you want to do when, you know, you've worked all day, you feel like you don't have anything in your brain left? And then, of course, that inevitably leads to frustration. And then how do you navigate through that? How do you talk through that? So, yeah, it's a lot of interpersonal challenges. But I think what has helped us is like keeping our eye on the goal to try to get through them. But it's tough. It's really tough.
Yeah. And it's definitely humbling.
Yes.
Because, you know, we have to wear all the hats. And we also never wore some of these hats before. Mm-hmm. And with that comes a lot of learnings, which I'm grateful to have the opportunity to do. Sometimes kind of like with friends, just I would like to outsource that, you know, just because I can do the job doesn't mean I'm the best one for the job, but I'm doing it. I'm still doing it. And so, you know, having to learn in real time and needing that real outcome to be just as immediate is sometimes an overwhelming task.
One of the things that I loved and still do love about RAC, the Regional Arts and Culture Council, is how open they are to fielding questions and having informational gatherings and things like that, which I realize might not help Danny, you, and Bernie's quite as much because as you said, you're two individuals, but they still support individual artists. And also, just to make sure that y'all know about SCORE, because they also have fantastic business resources that I have definitely benefited from with my personal businesses.
Thank you.
Which then
writing it down.
Yeah.
I've used SCORED as well.
Yeah. SCORED?
SCORE.
SCORE.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And look, look at this wealth of information. This is what it's about.
One thing I have noticed about being an outwardly, openly queer business or nonprofit is that, like, a benefit to that is that your community self-selects. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the people that are not okay with queer people, they just kind of stay away. And that's been awesome. So a little benefit to it.
Definitely.
Love that. And Bernie, you kind of set me up perfectly for our next question, which is, what drives and motivates you through periods of burnout and exhaustion?
Rage. Psych.
She's not psyching.
Anger at the system. No, I think for... right. I think honestly, like, I was kind of joking, but kind of not. But also just remembering the experiences people have had at the events that we've thrown, you know, people coming up to us and saying how meaningful something is, you know, our friends being able to sell their wares at one of our events, and, you know, or being able to promote somebody, like, all that, I think, is what really drives me and drives us. And I think that, you know, it's a privilege to be able to do what we do, and it is exhausting, but I think it's also our responsibility as community members to try to do as much as we can. So that's what really keeps me going, and I'm going to speak for Danny. I think also keeps her going, but I'll let her speak for herself.
I mean, it does. And the purpose, the point, the our why of doing it, because we genuinely want to see our friends and family win and succeed, and to receive their flowers and to celebrate them in their now, and to make things not have to be hard. And just for the bigger purpose of it all. And sorry, I lost my train of thought. just the ego aside, that we're serving a bigger mission, and it's because we have to. We have also a stake in it. It's for us too. It, just as much as it, we do it for everyone else, we are also beneficiaries of said service. It's for everybody, including ourselves.
I have a personal philosophy that I work with that I call the best life, the best adventures, and best is an acronym for beautiful, equitable, and ethical, sustainable, and in a timely manner. Mm. And that's my personal belief system, but part of how I came to that was in taking an equity lens training through Fuse, with Fuse through Matthew Reynolds Consulting. And so that's one thing that certainly keeps me going through the hard times. But also, the experience that's coming to mind right now is when I had the chance to be at the World as a Place of Truth festival at the Grotowski Institute in Wrocław, Poland. Getting there is a whole long story, but I was there on next to no budget and was adopted into the U.S. Artists Initiative that was going on. And one of the conversations that we were able to have with the Teatr Pienski folk, they were amazed at how all of us artists from the United States, as this panel has done, we're talking about the fundraising and the financing, where they don't have any of that. Being an actor, being an artist, being a director is just your regular day job, and you go and it is paid at a good living wage, and you go to work, you do your work, and then you go home at night. And the remembering that there are other countries and other models of being an artist in the world that are completely sustainable, where the artist work that we do is valued as just as important and a part of the fabric of life as doctors and teachers and bus drivers and burrito makers. And remembering that because it is happening elsewhere, it could also happen here, also keeps me going.
That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just because what is here doesn't mean it's what has to be. And even if it only exists in your imagination, then it does exist, right? To think it is to exist.
And if you can't imagine it, you can't create it.
Mm-hmm.
What keeps me going is my students. I always say this, but I swear teaching the classes and actually interacting with the people that come to Sincere Studio is the gooey center of the cinnamon roll for me. Literally everything could be going wrong, and then you have some of those moments and it just is going to be okay. So having that balance of like enough gooey centers is literally the only reason that we're still open, because yeah, it's just a great feeling. But I also feel like I was put on this earth to teach this skill, so it's feels really natural to me. But yeah, it's definitely the community that formed around Sincere Studio.
So we are at the point in this panel where we get to ask our very favorite question to our panelists. Can you tell us a moment of queer joy you have experienced since coming out as queer?
Big question.
Yeah, big question. We're all thinking.
You can't see it, but it's happening, I promise.
We're all having that so Raven moment.
I think for me, at Sincere Studio, we have Queer and Trans Sewing Club, and seeing people just be their like truest selves has been a really joyful experience for me. Whether it's like the music that they put on or like whatever they're sewing or just like being able to just feel like at home has been really cool.
The most recent one for me would be our Out Loud panel that we just hosted, because it was for and by queers, and to have a space where, I mean, we can't separate identities, but to hear from them just as individuals, just to hear, you know, what inspires them, who they are, what they love to do, and then for the people who got to watch and witness to also be in community. It was just a very intimate and personal thing, and it felt so inspiring to be amongst people like that.
Yeah, I had to piggyback off of that a little bit, which might
get
be cheating.
Own, Bernadette.
But I think what was really special about it too for me was that we also had queer folks of different generations mm-hmm. there. So it was, we had folks in the audience who were still in college, and then one of our speakers who has been in the Portland queer community for 20 plus years talking to us about his experience and reading his poems.
Judge Kemp,
yep,
look him up.
Yep, buy his book. He's amazing.
Nikisa Newton and Leechy were also our other panelists.
Amazing speakers. But being able to see the effect of their words, not only on me, because I've, as I'm sure we all have, had lots of struggles in my queer journey. So being able to hear that from them, being able to hear their advice, their experiences, and then seeing the effect that had on people in the audience was like, man, talking about like the ooey gooey center, like that had me almost tearing up, you know? So I think that was the moment of elation, just like, wow, okay, I feel seen, I feel heard, I feel safe to the utmost degree.
And it goes back to the why and the how we do what we do, mm-hmm. To see people participate like that, and to also want to be on the next one, to mm-hmm. have seen somebody on there and be like, I want to be there.
The moment that's coming up is not the most recent one, but I'm remembering before Fuse started hosting the Outright Theater Festival, which just completed with Mickey Gillette's Blonde on a Bum Trip this year. It was the much more poorly named, and we all in the company agree to this, hence why the name was changed to the Outright Theater Festival. But when it started, it was the Gay Pride Reading Series, and it was thrown together very quickly, and it was so well attended that that's why it turned into Outright, because that's what our community needed and wanted.
Thank you all, and that is the end of our ninth panel celebrating LGBTQIA2S+ heritage and the queer spaces in Portland. I want to thank all of our panelists here tonight. Thank you, Francis, Bernie, Danny, and the friend Kate. It is highly appreciated. Thanks to our public affairs director, Ender Black, our board member / board op, Sherry Morsch. Thanks to my co-host, Kate Chase. Thanks to our chief engineer, Arthur Risotto. And this is Artie Wall signing off for the ninth LGBTQIA2+ panel. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having
Thank
us.
You.
Eu estou em mim, eu estou aí, aqui, ali, estou em todo canto. Quando eu danço, eu estou ao vento, eu invento, entro, caio, saio.
live, whether you want to hear indie rock, hip hop, electronic music, or